Mason, welcome to Curio City.
Thank you.
So glad you're here.
Me too.
Hey, curious cuties. Welcome to Curio City. Today, we're diving deep into the world of health sovereignty and tonic herbalism with our extraordinary guest, Mason Taylor, the CEO, founder of Superfeast, and a renowned tonic herbalist. Mason shares his fascinating journey from the roots of Taoist philosophy to the creation of Superfeast, guiding tens of thousands on the path to discovering the healing power of medicinal mushrooms and adaptogenic tonic herbs. Brace yourself for a unique blend of wisdom and humor as Mason, not just a health expert, but also a budding comedian, bursts the bubble on the health scene. Keep listening for an insightful conversation on balancing business and passion, debunking myths about herbs, and envisioning the future of wellness. Please help me welcome Mason Taylor. Tell me, how did your journey lead you to become a CEO and founder of Superfeast and a tonic herbalist?
Okay, where to begin? It's funny, I've actually just been going through what we call the source essence of Superfeast this morning. I'm rolling out a fresh constitution, more of like an energetic and principle-based constitution that ensures that the roots are cemented so that going forward we know where we came from and we can return to the original essence of where Superfeast was born from. And so I've got the story literally fresh in my
very mind. Fresh.
Yeah. Look, it came from a number of places that led me to be a CEO. I kind of talk about this phase from when I was sensing within my muse what was present and what would eventually become the Superfeast. I've got that initial phase when it was within my my imaginal realm, and then that time when I decide, right, this needs to break off and be born from my muse and my imaginal realm and be free to go off and explore itself and become something outside of me. Happened first when I was 14 years old. I was on the on a car ride to work with mum, and the radio was just like rattling off all these disease statistics, and they were like just so matter of fact about how many men were going to get cancer and women were going to or people going to have strokes. And I was like, at the time, I was really burning for like some magic in life. I was like, you know, it was like Harry Potter and the movie Hook, so the Peter Pan kind of energy of like going back and rediscovering that there is this magic in life that can be integrated into the mundane. I didn't want to just escape. I just wanted to integrate like some magic. I was like, there's got to be more than this. This is just benign, gray, mundane, boring bullshit everywhere. All this, you know, institutional rote learning. I was just really feeling it at that age. And then I was just this hearing them talk about disease this way. I was like, why are we, like, I was like, you can't just say that so like matter of factly and not be like, where's the war cry around that? I was really feeling that at 14. And I felt really disillusioned and quite disgusted internally about how what I did was I crossed my fingers in that moment, hoping that like one of my parents and loved ones didn't just become one of those statistics. So that was the first strike moment that I remember where the feelings of what led to Superfeast eventually and what is still in the root system of Superfeast, that's when I first felt it. And then when I was 23, I was on a bus in Bolivia and I was like feeling I'd kind of already started cracking myself open with personal development and looking into preventative health at that time and just exploring the spiritual nature of life a little bit more. And I had this moment where I came into this feeling of the symptoms that I was experiencing. They weren't extreme, but they were enough. I started feeling worried for where I was going to end up when I got older. And all of a sudden I started feeling that same, like, I'm not in control here. I'm going to cross my fingers and just hope that things don't eventuate in a particular direction and hope that the institutions I rely on are going to help me land there. And I felt that disgust come up at that, and that benignness and that lack of engagement. And so the notes, I've really felt the fork in the road. I went, really felt that embodiment. It was still viscerally done a lot of embodiment exercises since then. And that was the most visceral and real it's ever been. And there's a choice of like, you can choose that path, which is to engage, that path, which is to not engage. And that's the moment when I chose that, which is that's probably the essence of the people as a CEO and having the capacity to be, you know, steward a company, knowing that I'm still connected with that moment and know I can connect and have empathy with the people who are at that moment. And in, like, for instance, in marketing, in product development, I know I'm on the hunt to offer people who are at that point and having those similar feelings, who are like leaning in and starting to engage with life and engage with their health and engage to the extent that they can in being the one that determines, or at least is a part of the conversation of, where their health destiny ends up. And so that was the other moment. And from there, it was like at uni, instead of doing my business, my last year of my business degree, I was in the back reading books on Taoist tonic herbalism and medicinal mushrooms, finally coming across a herbal tradition which wasn't just symptom-based or just like explaining a monograph of a herb, but was talking about, you know, there are treasures in the body and our job is to cultivate those treasures so that we can wind up in our elder years with the best possible chance of really embodying wisdom and sharing our encyclopedic knowledge and integration of all of our life experiences without being a projecty asshole. That's the thing. That's my worry. But yeah, that was like, it was just so beautiful. I was like, here, that I can get behind that. I'm focused on, like, I want to work with herbs and a philosophy that are focused on that. And so that's when I discovered, before, this is 6 months before the business was born. And I felt that, right, I kind of had my products without, and the philosophy that was going to back that products. I really can't stand taking a scalpel to lineage and traditions and just taking what you want from it without acknowledging the womb in which it comes and the river of chi, you know, the river of knowledge and philosophy in which it lies, and at least having the, you know, having at least giving it enough respect to comprehend what the nature of the teachings are, which is that was another one for me that I'm like, thank goodness I took the time to do that, because it's making it possible for me to remain a CEO and stay engaged and feel like I'm working with a company that has a soul, which it does. And I've been able to build a structure because I've been able to lock all this in. I've been able to build a structure around the business that works like an ecosystem that enables that soul to evolve and express itself, rather than being what I talk about a lot with I think it's really great, the purpose-driven business, but a lot of people don't go back to the root system and derive the source essence that allows to give birth to what becomes that purpose.
I love it. I love your passion. It definitely comes through. People can have businesses all day, but yeah, it's talking to someone who really believes in what they're doing is just so important. I personally am a mushroom girly. I love my mushrooms. I think I found you guys via someone on socials saw one of my videos, and it was like a reel of me like just scooting around my house with like a face mask on with a little drink in my hand. And it was like something along the lines of like point of view, like on my way to like watch documentaries on mushrooms, whatever. And then somebody sent it to you guys. And then we got like connected through that. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, I'm a mushroom girly. I actually have a mushroom tattoo. I actually don't even know which arm it's on, but I have a little mushroom space guy somewhere on my arm. So I definitely am like right there with you. Like I am so about that mission as well. And what you're talking about, the roots and being rooted, you know, you need to have that groundedness and know where it's coming from and know where, like, know what you're about. You can't just be like, yeah, touting around something. It eventually loses its life source when, you know, you don't have that solid foundation, those roots like you're talking about. And that's very mushroom talk of you, you know. That's very like that. And that's, again, like I'm so into that. I read a book on mushrooms. So like, this is so me. I'm so into it. I'm also like, I'm indigenous. And so herbs, herbalism, and things of earth are something that's like very important to me.
Like when you feel the vibe of mushrooms, and then you kind of like start venturing into the world of selling mushrooms, and you start thinking about the, say, archetypical aspect of what mushrooms represent within the psyche. You think about the reality of what they represent within the ecosystem. You think about the fact of as above, so below, you're selling them. How much are you going to embody of the nature, the full nature of what mushrooms represents within the etheric, within the ecosystem of what you know, looking into the mythology of mushrooms? Yeah. Like, how deeply are you going to let that in? Or are you going to be a surface dweller that just goes, look, I only want to go so far, and taking on that mushroom knowledge? Like, are you really going to let it infiltrate your entire lifestyle? Like, are you that curious? And curiosity, as we know, is really, it's quite difficult, because you just, like, especially in the beginning when you're getting into, like, the niceties of spirituality and naturalism and the world and cosmology and ecosystems, ancient philosophy, you're just like, oh my God, this is so amazing. It's like cathartic. And it's just like, it is that moment I was talking about magic before, and like Hook and Harry Potter. It's that moment when Harry arrives at Hogwarts and you're like, oh my God, I was a muggle and there was no magic and now there's magic everywhere. You're just like, it's so good. And then all of a sudden that curiosity takes you into some, you know, hero's journey kind of stuff, and therefore you need consistent dark nights of the soul. You need to consist. Mm-hmm. Well, at that point you get confronted with the beginning of every tradition is your heart and mind clear of external agendas and morality and right, wrong, and the need to be, you know, the need to dominate or avoiding being dominated, and cultural worldviews that are, you know, like, and can you also stay integrated with cultural worldviews so you're not like a sore thumb that can't work in the world, but then you're able to go right in and be curious enough to actually get some comprehension and perception of these new areas that your curiosity is leading you to, and maybe that's going to challenge everything. Maybe you're going to need to change everything. Maybe you're going to need to go and do things. Like, I never really, like, I really resist being a CEO, and I still know what my end game is, but it's taken me a lot longer than I thought it would. And because I had a lot of, you know, I had a lot of Peter Pan energy, and still do, about wanting to just like run away back to, you know, back to the imagination of Neverland. Mm-hmm. It's why I like the movie Hook. It's why it's in my constitution when he's grown up and then has to go back and reintegrate with the magic and not lose the fact that he has responsibilities as a father and a husband and you know, and being a part of the world. You can't just go and live in Neverland all the time, but you also need to go back and, you know, and reintegrate that imaginal part of yourself. It's why I love that so much. But it's you like, you got to have ovaries and balls to follow that, you know, that those sparks of curiosity. I think that's that's something that I think is the most interesting. And when, and remember that it's not just about what you want. So if you are getting into mushrooms and you start dancing in that lineage and you start studying that lineage, like, you really better remember that you're in, even though you've got sovereignty and you are, you know, an infinite being, perhaps that, you know, has never, always has been and always will be, as well as being integrated with everything else and having a relationship and a very intricate relationship with everything else. Maybe it's one way cosmically, maybe you can't escape the natural way of like just how much a part of an ecosystem you are, and you are going to be infiltrated. You're going to need to infiltrate. You're going to need to learn about, or you'll learn everything about yourself, and you're going to get dragged through it. So when you do go into these things, like, you remember, if you go into like working with mushrooms or a lineage, you are accountable to it. So you are as you learn aspects of it, you're going to probably need to be taking the scenic route in how to embed that into your lifestyle. If you work with it within an organization, you better believe it. You're not going to be taking a traditional route. Mm-hmm. Business and organization, and likewise, you're going to be asked to enter into places where you never thought you would, and it challenges your identity. And, you know, is it the worst thing? You need to have a clear heart mind connection there. Make sure your body's clean enough that you can figure out whether this is something that you're like, yeah, I'm really up for this adventure. I'm really up for understanding these new realms. That's the curiosity leads to adventure. Adventure is scary, and you never know where it's gonna take you. But yeah, especially an organization like we have Taoist philosophy completely embedded, and I like into this organization, and it's meant that I've had to change my whole framework in life,
yeah,
in order to allow this in. And likewise, with mycelium, again, that's a part of the constitution where I knew I wanted to infiltrate. I was so disgusted by the egoic nature of institution and especially where, like, the off their head control system within modern medical institutions. So I had that real, like, I'm right, I'm going to infiltrate out of energy about me. But then when you really go into naturalism, when you really learn about ecology, when you learn about, especially if you go into the mushroom kingdom, you look at, yes, like, there's a permeation and that, you know, and you do grow underground, and that's what we do. We grow underground into places who perhaps, if they knew how trippy we were, they wouldn't want us. But like a weed entering into a monocrop, we know they do want us. But when you actually understand mushroom ecology, there's such a symbiosis that you change the environment, but that environment or it changes you, and you need it just as much as they need you. And you need to find those sweet spots. And that's what ecology is. So there is no activism. There's a smidge of it, you know, like with that old activist energy, which I do like that war cry. But likewise, there's full symbiosis. Only in a dying ecosystem and of entropy is one that where we charge in and we destroy that because we know better. Like, that's such bullshit. Anyone who understands mushrooms will know that that's an absolute piece of shit, opinion on how ecology works. And if your heart mind isn't clear and you can't perceive the reality of what you're working with in these mushrooms, then you're going to have complete, you know, have no honor and disrespect to what they represent. You're just going to be selling a product and putting your own agenda onto it. And that's going to hit you karmically down the road. And you're going to have to continue to put a shield around your heart in order to continue to justify the way that you're doing business and the way that you're using these mushrooms. And it's really challenging. It's really nice when you get those feelings. It's a real call to yourself that, you know, it's like having a good friend and good, you know, teacher at times to help regulate you. And it takes ovaries, like, it takes balls to do this, right? So it's like, yeah, it's fun.
I love that. It's so fun. So what I love about bringing on guests is that the reason why I choose who I choose, it's because there's a part of my brain and my personality that really resonates with the guests that I bring on. And so when I bring on guests such as yourself, it's like a part of my brain is just like represented in you, like all of my, like, everything that you're talking about is just like very lit up in my brain right now, but I don't have all the words and the knowledge that you have in order to communicate a lot of it. So it's as if you're able to communicate for me in a passion that I have. That's just like this, like almost like a side passion. Say side, but you know, I have a mushroom tattoo. So it's like, it's not just a side passion, but it's so exciting for me to hear you and to hear you speak because it feels representative of myself. So I really appreciate you, you know, taking the liberty and, you know, bringing us down the different paths that you have even already, and even bringing up curiosity. Obviously it's a big theme here.
Yep.
And it's something that's very important to me and to our listeners. And I mean, it's a question that I had that you completely answered. So I'm like, so happy that you already went there. I was like, normally would ask how curiosity plays a role in your life, but like you've already like said, curiosity leads to adventure and all of that. And I just so much appreciate that. And speaking about, you loving Hook, I think that's so fascinating too. I mean, you look like Hook. Have people told you that before? You look like the character Hook.
Yeah, I can. I do have that Dustin Hoffman. Me,
you do.
I want my bubbly. I do like have the I'm 38. Oh. No, I'm 38. Oh, man, I'm really struggling this year to remember my age. I'm 38.
Oh, no.
I'm 38 this year. And for my 40th, I don't know whether I'm going to go traveling and just allow this to be a dream in my head or whether I'm actually going to do it. I think I've always, I've had the dream of having like the Hook themed 40th birthday. Because I feel I've been going through that period of like leaving Neverland. And you know, when like, you know, like when, like Miss Wendy look like, you know, when Peter comes back for the first time to visit Wendy, and he's like, you know, he's a complete shark lawyer, and like then the son describes what he does, and he blows him out of the water. He comes in and he acquires her, and then Wendy looks at him and goes, "Peter, you've become a pirate." And he had to go and like become the pirate. I feel like in a way, like I literally just realized, I told my team recently, we've had a big shift and an upgrade and ready to like take the boat. And I've told my team, like, I need a group of pirates on this team that are willing to venture into uncharted waters and really take this message outside of this comfortable bay that we've been in. It's kind of back to where we were in the first 5 years of Superfeast, where I was just charging and going into every realm I could, and I was screaming at the top of my lungs, like, Taoist tonic herbalism, medicinal mushrooms, and I was being extroverted, and, you know, and then we had that, we caught that wave and of that mushroom world, and so we've just been living off that for ages. It's been great, and we've been in such a beautiful, reconciling kind of time. And then I'm like, now the tide's changing, everyone. Like, there's another wave coming, and we gotta upgrade, and we're gonna embody a lot of the principles of an ecosystem based organization that, like, you know, I've been heavily influenced by Buckminster Fuller's views of syntropic business. Here's a few, you know, that futurist, that genius futurist, Ken Wilber's integral models of the psyche as you go through evolutionary stages. That's been represented in reinventing organization, moving into a teal level organization that goes from away from the orange hierarchy through the flat structure, which is where I've kind of been needing to learn how to grow a business from a flat structure, mm-hmm. It's a family kind of base, to bang, to an ecosystem based organization. It's a kind of, I found it very difficult, and I'm sure I will find it rewarding in the next year or two. But right now, I just say it's just been, I found it difficult. Had one team member just be like, you know, I've loved my time Superfeast. It's been like 4 years. It's just like, I just don't really feel like going out of the bay and going into so many uncharted waters. And I was like, oh, I respect you. So I was just like, it was, like, I love when people can feel the symbiosis of, you know, and the business, you know, like, and they can be like, oh, I'm not, now my next call to adventure is coming in another role. Like, I love that.
Right.
Like when that occurs, and that's how I aim for it to occur, and got a pretty good strike record in 12 years. Had a few doozies, but that's okay. That happens when you're learning how to go from, especially from a flat structure. Anyone that knows like that flat green structure and what that comes with, versus when you actually start bringing in like some real, like real direction and agency, especially as a founder or the leaders of the company. So it can, growing pains. It's like growing bones. It's
hard. For sure.
But that pirate energy, like, is like but then going back and going, yes, becoming the pirate and becoming the person who's of the world. You can't just escape into your imagination, into ideas all the time, which in the Tao is where you escape in through the liver, what's called the liver hun. You know, you imagine, you can dream what's possible, and you come up with plans, and it's so dopamine, and, you know, I'm such a visual person. But then you go, you know, that goes through then the heart fire, and the heart fire, you can feel the passion and the burning to express that. You can feel the potential of love and gratitude and authenticity. And then you land in the spleen and the spleen earth energy. And then it's like, right, are you willing to really observe this bit of, you bring the intellect in at this time and bring some, like, are you landing this? Is that a pipe dream, or are you actually going to do this? Have you got the ability to actually go through and build, not just live up there, you know, land here on earth and actually build something where that dream becomes real? I find that process, that's not generally my constitution's strength, and that's been really great for me to go through that process. Then I think, like, for my 40th, I had the dream of like having a hook themed Neverland party, and like, and go back and really claim that part of myself and just have like that bangarang food fight. And then also make sure I'm like, I've got the vision of like, I want to, like, I'm like, yeah, I think I'm like, my body's in pretty good shape, but I'm like, I'm feeling like I'm really ramping up to being like ripped again. when I get to that party and have that scene when Hook first sees Peter come up and he's like, how did you ever fit back in those smashing tights again, Peter? That's my 40th birthday, just in case anyone cared.
Are you a woo-woo girly? Are you looking for a new connective way to practice your spirituality and feel checked in and aligned? Well, my personal tarot reader, Allie Cunningham, who runs Tarot's Arrow, is expanding her business. And while she is totally donation-based, shout out accessibility, she also offers a really unique tarot experience where things can get juicier and a little deeper in a membership option. So for once, twice, or thrice a month, you can join and have regular meetings. Bonus points for if it's on a new or full moon, to peek into the energy that you're carrying. It's a really great way to get a third-party objective perspective on what shows up, helps build confidence in your own practice, if that's something you do, and builds a really beautiful and supportive friendship. So for once a month meetings, it's $22.22 a month. For twice, it's $33.33. And for three times and unlimited text access for quick pools to check in, it is $44.44 a month. My code gets you 50% off your first month using CurioCity50. Check her out on Instagram at Tarot's Arrow or on her website at tarotsarrow.com. Code CurioCity50 for 50% off your first month.
For the people who listen to this podcast, they're called Curious Cuties, and they're well aware that when I rebranded this podcast, it was right after my 30th birthday, and my 30th birthday was themed 30 going on 13. So there is a common theme in like bringing back the magic of imagination and the curiosities you had as a kid. And, you know, a lot of my adulthood, I shut down a lot of my questioning, my curiosity, that side of my personality that really was stunted for a while. And so as I, you know, was in my mid to late 20s, all that was being revived again. And I was like, I just need to go back to being super curious and questioning and excited about life and able to be excited about upgrades. That's the Curious Cuties are very well aware that we love a good upgrade here. So I'm totally there with you. And it's so exciting whenever you go through that, like that renewal of like leveling up. And again, but somehow remaining grounded is like quite the undertaking.
It's in life. It's personally, it's harder. You can't like write a constitution. It's about, you know, yourself. You just have a constitution and it's there for you to interpret and stay connected to the, you know, maybe an original intention. It's a consistent practice in the deeper lineages of Taoism where you connect, you know, get a sense of the original intention. So, you know, the original intention, the original essence of an organ. So you can feel it in a physical level. You can feel energy moving around and that's really cool. Oh my gosh. And you can start to see like the magic that happens. But then once you've had your fun moving it around, you go like, now come back into and comprehending the spiritual nature of that, that energy or the earth and the original energy. And that's when the work really begins. And it's with a business, you can just communicate it in terms of here's the source essence and the root system of the business, and you can sit and you can comprehend it and it can be discussed and it can, like, which is like a classic text in Chinese medicine. That's why there's a revival right now. People, the soul and heart of Chinese medicine just got ripped out a little bit when it became institutionalized in the 50s by Mao Zedong, and he created a commodifiable business that could be taught by rote in universities, which I think was kind of necessary in order to meet the demand. And also it's worked to get Chinese medicine everywhere. Now there's a restoration and a soul retrieval of Chinese medicine. And it's happening by going back to the essence and studying the classics and not just reading them intellectually, but comprehending the original intention. So it's really, but it's not, it's different. You're doing it in a business with like superfees constitution or classics in Chinese medicine, so on and so forth. Doing it with yourself, coming back, and that's where agency comes into it, because no one else is ever going, you're never going to be able to share that same understanding like you can with like a classic text of Chinese medicine or in an organization. It's just you. You've got to be there comprehending the original aspect of yourself and staying rooted to that while then staying present and then understanding right now, now that I know that, I got a trajectory to move forward into the future in a way that you mm-hmm. never lose that original essence, that original sense and that original feeling. And that's, yeah, it's a fun, wild ride, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it is. And there's so much more even like about you and your personal life that I kind of want to ask about, if that's okay too.
Yeah, absolutely. Shoot.
So I read that you also do comedy. So I want to know in what ways you incorporate humor and comedy into your approach to burst the bubble on the health scene.
Yeah, I probably, if I could go into indulge me in shoulds, I should have been advised to go into comedy leaving high school. I'm gonna claim my holding on to my resentment a little bit, if everyone would indulge me in that. So I'm gonna
okay.
That's just because I want to know why I didn't make that choice. It was so obvious. It was the only thing I wrote when I went into with the career advisor. I was like, the only thing I can think of that I enjoy is comedy, watching comedy.
Oh wow.
I was like, yeah. At that point I hadn't done presenting in a long time. I didn't have that thought of myself as someone who could get up and create some drama and do some presentation. But I was like, I'm not a bad writer, and I'm pretty good at creating something out of two oppositions or two different ideas. And so I was like, perhaps I could write. And so, but then it was like the advice I got just hit me. And I'm really, that's my thing. I'm really susceptible to other people's judgments. And so it was just like, look, the closest you're going to be able to get to that is like something like journalism. Go and study journalism or study. Mm. So I didn't go into it there, but that really stung, and I can still feel the sting. And I remember I talked to my best friend about it, going like, why, like what was going through our heads? Like, why did we not think laterally a smidge to go like, why do we not go to the comedy clubs in Sydney ourselves? Like, why do we not discuss this? And I'm really, and when I have that feeling, like, that's why I like regret. I find regret can be really heavy, and you can't hold on to that non-useful projecty regret. But then at some point you get to this, like, the source of what is, you know, you could use the word regret. And I really value it. I think it's such a good clue into the past of a pattern that's like worth going and like exploring. It's like, why try and go and create all these other new experiences and chase all these other pipe dreams without just getting some, at least some like peace or just reconcile it a little bit. So I went back into that, you know, and I went back as far as I could to when there was like, especially going through like a phase when I was like, it's been a big couple of years and I'm not a traditional businessman. I'm not used to facilitating change, and I'm not used to facilitating change of organization, honoring an organization and what it needs to do, and like the realities of having a business. And when I have people who don't want me to make that change because they're comfortable, I've gone and done a lot of my like heart expansion work. I've gone deep into all the into plant medicine and a lot of very deep practices. I've just been, this year has just been a lot of talk therapy to get myself through it. We've had a second child, and I had to go through this process. And so, and I'm like, I don't want to be a CEO. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this bullshit. I didn't ask for this. And it's like, you have to. This is what you've been like. And I knew that I had to. And so during it, I was like, well, what do I want to be? And I know, as a man, I'm not going to know what's next until I fulfill the vision that I had, which is implementing an organism-based structure that turns this into a self-regulating company that runs off the root system of its original intention, so I can go out there and be a global juggernaut. I know the things that I need to do to get there. And I know what it's going to mean in terms of like fulfilling like the financial responsibility I have, which is a reason the super fees. I've got a disabled mother who's going to need to require financial assistance as she gets older. And likewise, I've got a growing family as well. And so I know I have to get there before I'm going to be able to have a break state and I'm going to go away and say, what's next? And I have to earn that phase. And that's a part of like any good, you know, group of business mentors who understand this style of business will know that there are foundations until that leadership or like vision department will be like, it'll actually require you to say what's next, because we don't need you as an operator founder anymore, but you had to cut your teeth and earn it. And I really do believe you need that. So in the middle of all that, I was like, the only thing I can, what I want to Peter Pan right now is I just want to have a hissy fit and go and just become a comedian and throw all this away. That was the only thing I could think of. And I went back and I was like, I remember, like, that's actually, I can feel, I remember that. I was like, that was my dream. And so I went back and I was like, I need a hobby. I need something on the side in order to like really survive and thrive, hopefully, this phase. And it's like two years ago. And so I went and did a stand-up comedy course and got back into, you know, read a bunch of comedy books and started getting up on stage. And it was just so different to the wellness world. Like I've been, you know, when you've been in the wellness world for a long time and you've seen all the patterns, you start, you know, you're over that bubble of that initial like, oh my God, like you're starry-eyed and you realize you've seen enough of them. You've had enough mentors and you've met enough of the leaders and you've seen what goes on behind closed doors and you see, you know, maybe not to the majority, but the damage that, you know, a lot of this like highly marketable and just like 2-minute noodle people just going and just presenting themselves as experts and dragging people into a philosophy that isn't complete. And when you've actually seen what happens sometimes to people's psyches and how damaged they are by, you know, by people like that, you know, when I felt that I was actually probably like one of those people in the beginning, even though I, you know, there's no evidence that I actually, you know, did anything that was like abhorrent, I could feel the non-completeness and the non-integration of a lot of the concepts that I was talking about. I had to self-regulate myself out of the limelight and out of that stage persona and try and come back to reality and play the long game and be like, you really, you know, I don't have a complex about like, you know, I'm not good enough or anything like that. I've just come back to the reality. I'll teach what I'm comfortable teaching. And so I felt like I'm in the wellness world and I can feel I'm having all those feelings. And so I needed something outside of wellness, and comedy was one. And I just get up and I just bag the absolute living shit out of myself in the wellness world and everyone in it. And at the same time, felt that, you know, that it was really healing for me. I like that shining through of what I do love about it, you know, and I would, my natural presenter would come through and I'd learn how to, you know, I had to learn how to create well-constructed jokes, and I would get up, and what I've always done in wellness is I get up and I'm such a fast talker and I talk the way I want to. And in order for me to stay interested, I'm going to speak this way and screw you professional speakers that don't like it. And to an extent, I still believe that. But I couldn't get away with it in comedy. There was like I didn't understand it well enough to break outside of the rules. And so it was really humbling for me to be like, yeah, you want to do it this way and you are doing it, speaking it, you know, telling the jokes your way. And it's getting an okay result, but it's not landing and it's not following a cadence. You need to like slow down. You need to go back and learn that joke construction and you need to learn the rules and the cadence before you're actually able to break them. And so that was a huge shift for me. And I just had the best time up on stage. I had the best time, you know, like creating a few characters and sharing a few skits on social media. It really, you know, buoyed me. I think in America it's called buoyed. It's really buoyed. It's a buoy here, they're called. So it buoyed me through that phase. And then at one point I felt that integration. I went, okay, amazing. I actually don't want to go and be a stand-up comedian. I love being on stage and I plan to keep on doing stand-up here or there, but I don't want to go and tour around and try and get, you know, open for someone and, you know, do the night after night doing a couple of sets at night. I was like, you know, I part of me was like, oh, it would be fun down the road to do that when there's no pressure on it to become a career. But I love the, you know, I felt I'm continuing to study joke structure. I'm really like following that, like I'm past that point of feeling that resentfulness towards the wellness stay in and to the world, you know, a lot. It helped me really in, like, can reconcile a lot of those feelings of like that, what I, you know, I was upset that I had to go through this process and that I kind of like I'd started this thing and that I had obligations to, like, you know, I had financial obligations. I didn't like it. I wanted to be a Peter Pan, but it's like hanging on. But so anyway, that really helped me resolve that. And so, yeah, now I'm just enjoying watching what's like, I'm just got a basically, you know, a bit of a, I feel like a new style of comedy coming up. I really want it to be like inspiring and like, you know, not inspiring in the way that it's like, it doesn't actually, you know, take the absolute living, you know, shit, like piss out of everyone, like, you know, but I want to feel inspired by it. I want to feel, and so, yeah, I'm thinking I'm down the road. I want to create, I think I've, what I want to do is create a few shows, incorporate a few characters into it, go and collaborate with a couple of other comedians and, you know, maybe take shows at, like, on the road a little bit. I think that's like that aspect of the traveling jester is something that it's useful for me to integrate after I've integrated that, like, you know, that pirate CEO leader slash Peter Pan wearing his, you know, smashing tights again. Like,
I love that. I love that so much. I know. So my husband he's the producer of the podcast. So he cuts it all and makes all the reels and all that. And I know, he will really love this segment because I think he can really relate. I think anyone can relate, but I think that a lot of what you talked about, there's like a specific struggle within that I think men specifically like deal with, I guess. And the layers that you're talking about, like the CEO layer and then like, yeah. And this Peter Pan mentality, like I get it. And I've seen him struggle with the same sort of concepts that you're talking about. So first of all, thank you for sharing. I know that's quite vulnerable to talk about, especially when it comes to even the bitterness that you have had of what should have been in the past. Like, why didn't anybody help me with the obvious? Like, I understand that feeling as well. Just for career paths that I've had. And again, Curious Cuties know my story, but, and I don't need to go into that, but I can resonate and I really relate to that. So thank you for sharing. And on comedy, I mean, I believe that laughter is also medicine. So it is kind of, you know, goes with your ethos of your life and your passion. So, I love seeing how people can hold what seems like two different identities, you know, to the outside world, but really it makes so much sense because we're all complex human beings. We're not like, you know, just we are just like this label or like a little box. Like, we are so complex, just like anything and anyone else. So that's why I really wanted to get into that side of your life as well, because it's something that we talk about a lot here, on the podcast, is holding multiple truths and, being in alignment with like your own ethos and allowing yourself to kind of flow in the different seasons of your life as you need to. And so, yeah, that's a big theme here. And I really wanted to say just like, thank you so much for like going into all that. I really appreciate it. And like I said, comedy is also medicine. So humor is medicine.
Absolutely. It's very deep medicine. It's nice, you know,
yeah.
Even though you got to really respect the hat, that you put on when you step into a role, you need to be like, you got to make sure you got to be like, when I step into that role, I don't bring my own agenda anymore. I energize that role. I'm the chi entering into the potential of the structure that then acts in accordance with the purpose of this company, and that this company works when my personal sense of purpose and what's going to bring fulfillment is fully aligned with that of the role or the department or the organization. That's how we have the one of our virtues or values, which emerges when there's coherence, which is joy. And joy only emerges when there is that soul flame connection. And sometimes people realize it's not there anymore. And you've got to, again, have the ovaries or balls to self-regulate yourself and go like, right, it's not because the role of the business doesn't need to change. I need to figure out whether I'm going to co-evolve in this direction and peel off. And so the reality of that is you need to be able, even though you can't project your agenda onto a business just because you mentally want it to go in another direction, but you do need to be able to bring your full self and your full expression as a human to the role. And that needs to align. And so it's been funny when I have really tried to shut off that part of myself. It leads to a lot of disengagement because people are like, well, no, that was like one of the things we liked about like engaging with a company where, yes, it's run professionally, but it was nice seeing, you know, whether it was silly or relatable, like still to this day, the best ad we've ever had was me with a mushroom hat on. And I don't think you have these ads in the US, but when we have these warehouse sales in Australia, they're like, they're not talking like this. Come back to this warehouse. We got basement bottom prices. We got, you know, we got mushrooms going out every left, right and center. Have you been wanting to create the sovereign immunity of your body that you know has had the potential to go to make you an immortal? With immortal, which means you could be not being an asshole when you're older and being a great one to your kids, not just telling them how to be, but watching them have it come into potential. Then that's what you want the medicinal mushrooms for. Like that. That's the kind of thing that I did that once on my Instagram.
Yeah.
And then a team went, can we use that as an ad for Superfeast? And it was by far the best performing ad we've ever had. And
that's amazing.
Yeah, it's been fun. And like, likewise, it's like, again, it's not, it's that, that's the, that's relation, that's true relationship when Superfeast, it's like, it's not, I don't just get to be a comedian. All I want, there's times when I've shared on my personal page things in a comedic sense and we've had stores go, we don't like that. And we go, that sounds like a you problem. Tough.
Yeah.
Like it's like with that, because it's not, it wasn't unreasonable or divisive or anything like that. And it's just like, it just triggers there. That's fine. But I, at the same time, I'm still respectful of my seat, and I don't just get to be that every type of comedian within Superfeast that I want where it's not appropriate, but like at the same time there's a beautiful harmony between that aspect of myself and Superfeast. And there are, this is when, even though I don't get to completely project my agenda, I energize the purpose of Superfeast, that there's so many crossovers where you get to bring that part of your magic and your uniqueness. And it's like, yeah, while you're here energizing your seat, of course, bring it along. It's only going to enhance the entire, you know, the entire organization, and it lights you up. It means you don't have to like shut off a full part of yourself when you show up to work like a robot and just like, I'm energizing. Like you need a soul. That's why we have a concept in the Constitution called role versus soul. So we know where the role is, and we know we are the soul stepping in, and we're energizing the role. And we want to make sure that we are like fully engaged as a soul in doing that. So yeah, it's been fun.
Oh, love that so much. I say on my personal Instagram that I blend woo woo with woohoo. So I feel like a lot of people in the wellness, but like more the spiritual wellness, space, I feel like those people, we have to have an outlet. Like we have to have like that light. We have to have the like, okay, like let's dance it off. Let's laugh it off. Let's like bring in the joy like you're talking about. So, yeah, I can really appreciate that. I'm curious, like, what are some misconceptions that people have about medicinal mushrooms and adaptogenic tonic herbs that maybe you encounter?
I mean, the biggest one with medicinal mushrooms that they are, you know, I think a lot of the people in America are calling them functional mushrooms now, that they are the psychedelic mushrooms, probably the biggest misconception, and that also that they are really close in the way that they work in the body and perhaps affect particular constitutions or symptoms as like culinary mushrooms. So they're soil born, whereas the medicinal mushrooms, we're generally looking at either like majority of tree born. So when you have a mushroom, a lot of the time they're, you know, they're hard kind of woody texture, not all the time, but nonetheless, it's a very different constitution, energetics constituent constitution of a mushroom when it's grown on wood versus that the dampening culinary mushroom. So like that's probably a lot of people who come from Ayurveda will have that, you know, you may you know, remember like, you know, mushrooms, what are they, like tamas or what? No, anyway, like they've got that dampening effect, so generally they're avoided, but realizing that we're in a different class of mushroom here. Mm-hmm. And they're quite beneficial to those constitutions, even that are seen to not want to, you know, take in culinary mushroom. Likewise, people's aversion to the flavor of mushrooms, especially in those culinary types, it's like
yeah.
a completely different flavor profile. You know, some of right. them, you know, like shiitake extracts and, you know you'll still have that somewhat of a familiar mushroom, but nowhere near like a button or a portobello. Like you're taking, you know, like cordyceps extract, it's like it's umami, you know, it's a bit, you know, a bit astringent. It's like it's rich. It's got like a, you know, it's got a real richness to it. You haven't tasted mushrooms like that. You know, like the reishi is just like really beautiful bitters in reishi from those the beta glucans. The sugars in there are really nice bitter tonics. It just you're like, oh, that's not what I thought a mushroom was at all. Shaga is like, you know, like it's don't even know how to describe shaga. It is kind of like got a coffee, you know, it was like a coffee replacement in World War II for a lot of Scandinavian countries. You know, you can kind of taste that. You can taste the vanilla in it. You know, it's got that kind of vanilla essence and that little bit of a dirt kind of flavor like coffee does, you know, which is like, you know, that sclerotia. It's like it's such a unique thing. And you're like, oh, I've actually never tasted anything like this. And that's probably a big difference there for people to just work with internally, to the word mushroom, to not have that same impact on you as a culinary. And likewise, you know, we're just not knowing that these aren't psychedelic in any way. And then with a
do you get messages like asking if it is like,
yeah, I mean, yeah. We're especially as much as we're a company who we want to, you know, we want to be in a lot of like majority of oncology wards, and we want to be, we're in a lot of chemists and pharmacies here in Australia. We have oncologists using our mushrooms within clinic.
Amazing.
We have a lot of people doing them with like alongside chemotherapy. We have a lot of practitioners. So there's a very serious arm to the business, and we work with institutions in that way, and we're having that collaboration. But at the same time, we are really re-engaging in that initial energy of superfees where we are riding into the mainstream, just generally the mainstream with ads and with events, so on and so forth. And so we're touching on a lot of people who are like right at the beginning of like, you know, it's the same questions I was getting 12, 13 years ago when I started, all the same trepidations, you know, that's what I would do in the markets. I would, you know, oh my gosh, what are you talking about? Mushrooms in coffee. And it's good things to remember. I was just talking about it with my trainer today. I'm talking about in regards to his martial arts teacher kind of going and getting bored with the foundations and the basics, therefore going and teaching things that are beyond people. And that's something that in business, you got to remember that just at the time when you're getting bored of it and you think that it's time to shut up and never say that again, because you're just like, I'm so sick of saying that these mushrooms are not psychedelic or that they're not like culinary mushrooms, or explaining why it is you are able to put them in a coffee or a hot chocolate. Just as you are getting like excruciatingly bored of it is just when there's a group of people who are starting to open up to that potential. And so you build the structure and you know, you can't move on unless you've built a foundation that ensures that that's always going to be addressed, because I can't keep on addressing it. I do need to go wild and fly off at some point, but you know, I need to earn it by locking that in. And so that's what we are, you know, we're creating like fun, you know, the fun, fiery ads that are really talking to those people in these, like, you know, really in that middle of that bell curve of the population who are, you know, what is an adaptogen? That's probably the biggest one. That's the misconception. Like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, I've lived this for so many years. They've like dominated my life for like 15 years. But the biggest misconception there is like, all right, well, what is an adaptogen? And so you go back to the basic explanation, you know, it's a...
So then go ahead and tell us then, what is an adaptogen?
Officially, it's a type of herb that is going to support the body within the framework that it has the capacity to facilitate self-regulation, or it might force regulation of the system, but then eventually it'll tip over a place when you're out of a dire symptomatic state, and you're bringing self-regulation to the system, and you're reestablishing the capacity that your systems have to communicate with one another and regulate themselves. So that's like, it means it's going to have, you know, there's a rough explanation here that they have an accumulative effect, and there's a lot of gray zone in this, but the sense that it is as you take adaptogens, the longer you take them, the more you accumulate those benefits. And that's a big grain of salt with that one, but it is true. It's going to have a non-specific effect on the body. So I don't know the way it's going to have an effect on your immune system versus my immune system, because it is going to, when taken in a correct dose and with consistency, regulate us in different ways. And then it's going to have
it will adapt. Like that's in the word. Yeah.
That's it. And imagine you restore your capacity to adapt. They do. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that people will feel like in the beginning, it may be the one making you adapt. But what it does, the misconception is, the third one, in case I forget, is that it's non-toxic. It's going to have a non-toxic effect on the body. So it can't be a herb that you're going to really damage yourself. If you just start shooting blind, like most people in the population are just looking for results. If you just start shooting blind with like Shizandra and Reishis and, you know, Hushuwus and Ginsengs, you're not going to be able to really damage yourself that much at all. And you got to be really sick and really symptomatic to like do some damage to yourself with these herbs, in which time you would be with a practitioner 100%. So that's the third one. The point I was going to make is that misconception of that you create a reliance on these herbs. And this is when we go into tonic herbalism, adaptogens, tonic herbs in the Taoist system, 2000 years of tradition of using these based on a text, the Shennong Bensao Jing, which said there are superior herbs that will help you to cultivate and protect the treasures of the body, the Jing, the Qi, and the Shen. And these are the herbs you use to ensure that you aren't prematurely aging or rapidly aging or degenerating. That's the Jing, to ensure that you remain vital and you have the vitality and the Qi and the lightness to keep on animating the body. So you have you're animating the potential of your body to reach your destiny, to do good shit in the world, basically. And then the Shen, which is your unique spirit. And so you take these herbs to ensure that we're shining light, that you are cultivating virtuousness uniquely, and the way that you express your infinite essence and your infinite comprehension of love as you see it with the world via your personality. These are the herbs that do that. Like these are like over 2000 years ago, we get a text that says these are the superior herbs that we use to do that. And we just get access to them now. And that's why we need to stay connected to that philosophy, where there's a little bit of a smidge of appreciation of going, my gosh, and how many millions of people went into sitting with these herbs and discovering these herbs and discovering those are the ones. Like these are the ones, these are the superior herbs we can take. And they don't, the last point I was going to make, they don't create reliance. If you're really out of balance, you will feel they'll get in there and do work for you, and they will bring your system into regulation, and they will counter like a dysregulation of like you might be in like a hella toxic role or have a crazy coffee addiction, or like, you know, you might be running against the grain, and and they will help get in there and fight for you and fight for your regulation and the protection of your treasures. And only if you continue to ignore that you are out of sync with, you know, your own sense of, you know, let's say curiosity, which is a good lighthouse, or, you know, you're just completely out of sync with the natural world and reality, you know, sure, you can keep on using them and you will become reliant on them. But inherently, if you listen, they will work with you, and to not create a reliance, all of a sudden you'll make a shift in your lifestyle. And this is why Taoist philosophy, or, you know, real good yogic philosophy, any of the ancient philosophies that get you in sync with reality and nature, you start being in harmony, and then you start really working with these herbs to cultivate health. You're not just, you don't have a reliance anymore. Then you're cultivating your own organs capacity, right? And the capacity of your chi to transform. At that point, there is zero reliance. You'll feel at some point those Jing herbs that build that kidney essence, that bone health, that sexual vitality, which is the potential of your body to not degenerate, but to carry you through life physically and able. You'll get to the point with Jing herbs where you'll be like, oh my gosh, I feel really locked in. I don't feel like it anymore. It's like a food. I don't feel like that food anymore. I don't feel like those herbs anymore. It might just be like, oh, I might just need to take, my lifestyle's dialed, or I'm feeling good enough and not feeling exhausted, that I'll take jing herbs like every, you know, few weeks. Then you might, but you'll go, oh, I feel like those qi herbs now. And that's when you cultivate that vitality that animates your physical body and animates your vitality that gets you, you know, gets you doing shit. And that's what a lot of people just get gassed. They've got the you know, the kidney power to do stuff. They just don't have the vitality to animate that extra hour in the end of the day. Or think in a different way, you know, have the strength to even think, you know, slightly differently. So at that point, they start becoming allies and friends. They, you know, and this is, gets a little bit woo, but, you know, I know, like, you know, that's when, again, you can actually look at this. There is a physiological effect here. You also need to understand how qi works in terms of understand where that you don't have a dependence. Because a lot of people in Western thinking will just be like, what are you talking about? If you stop taking something, it stops doing it. And it's only when you're taking it is it do something. There's no understanding that you have the capacity to perceive things in your body alongside the you know, the friendship and usage of a particular type of herb, qi herb for a long time, that understand actually how you work. Therefore, your lifestyle and the way that you operate becomes more efficient. Therefore, you have more qi. Therefore, you don't have to be taking those qi herbs anymore. There's no, you know, there's no real, like, you know, like they're not thinking in decades. That's what we think they're thinking in. And so that's the other thing, is that you're just going to take these to fix a symptom. You can do that. A lot of practitioners use adaptogens, especially just to help alleviate symptoms, generally get to the bottom of, they know they've got the masters, the master plants of the adaptogens getting in there and alleviating symptoms. And they're watching people's response to make sure that they've picked the right adaptogen if people are really sick. So there's that part of it. But then when you cross over from adaptogens to Taoist tonic herbalism, same herbs, different philosophy, that's when you get them into your lifestyle. And, you know, you'll, you know, yes, they'll rotate. You'll take it for a month or, you know, sometimes you'll take it for 2 years and then you'll just, you know, you'll rotate and it doesn't matter. It's, you, it's like eating. They're a part of your lifestyle now. Or it's like your yoga practice or your breath practice or your exercise practice or your, you know, your qigong. It's part of that, that little just outside of diet. And, you know, like in that one, and it's one of your practices and you'll engage with it and you'll have a long and healthy relationship with the practice of tonic herbalism.
Oh, I love that. Personally, I have the I Am Gaia blend.
Oh, wow.
Great. And I love it. I've been using it for a while now, for months at this point. And, yeah, I love it. I put it in my bone broth actually in the morning. So I've been loving that. I also have the, is it M8?
Oh, the mate, mushroom mate.
Yeah, of that one. And I love that one. It's good for like immunity when I go home to see my family. You know, for holidays, I make sure I have that like stocked up. Do you have, so that those are my, what I personally use. I've tried a couple others as well, I believe. Do you have any recommendations for anyone who's like interested in super feasts, mushrooms, or the adaptogenics, like what someone might, want, like just run of the mill, like I don't really know much about mushrooms kind of energy. I'm going to the website. What should I look at?
The easiest place to start, especially the mushrooms are really the all rounders that it's most of the time that's where people want to start because it's going to be hitting so many different systems. Whether you want a capsule, that's where the mushroom mate is good, or a powdered. Our most iconic blend is the Mason's mushrooms. So they're both eight mushrooms. In case anyone's wondering, the reason we have a different one is just because of like the mate we've got was able to be, we don't have supplements here. We've only got food and medicine. So we need to list our herbs as medicines in Australia. It makes it way more difficult to operate. Whereas in America, there's all supplement categories. So that's the reason there's two different ones. The Mason's mushrooms is where most people are going to start just to experience full-blown one blend.
And that's a powder?
That's a powder.
Right? Okay.
Or mushroom, mate, just get those mushrooms into you. And the other place people start are the Jing herbs and the Jing blend a lot of the time because that's the base. That's the root system of the body, the kidneys, and that's the root. So a lot of people are exhausted and we just like doing a course of Jing for people just as they're getting online just to make sure that everything at the base is really locked in and rooted. In terms of classification, the I Am Gaia, which is our female formula, has a lot of Jing herbs in it. So if you, it's just the Jing blend is if you're really gassed, get a course. You can do Jing and I Am Gaia at the same time. You'll feel the Jing will really put fuel back in your tank. And then once you're not feeling exhausted and absolutely, you know, absolutely depleted anymore, then you're like, cool, I don't need as much real like concentration there. Some people mm-hmm. are living crazy, like, you know, in city executive lives, or, you know, like mums who have just got like kids everywhere and a bajillion things. They are not, they are leaking Jing. They stay on the Jing, but they're very aware mm-hmm. of, you know, it's great when you have that. I Am Gaia has a lot of Jing herbs. So if you're not feeling gassed, you can just go, cool, we'll go over the Jing herbs. You know, you're getting that like Jing supplementing activities.
I've definitely felt that like intuitively. Like I don't take it every day, but I definitely go through seasons, and even like just through different times of my cycle, I'll take it more as well. Yeah, it's very intuitive. Mushrooms have always been that way for me though. I go through seasons, and I feel like called basically by the mushrooms, like when it's time to reintroduce them and have them back in my lifestyle. So I definitely
the fun thing there is to go, cool, yeah, because that curiosity, like then I'll get to the curiosity, but that, yep, I understand intuitively when I feel like that and when I feel like that. You've worked mm-hmm. with, to an extent, the Jing herbs in the I Am Gaia, but it's especially the blood-building herbs within the mm-hmm. I Am Gaia. So that's the quality you can attach to it and be like, cool, I can feel right. when that blood-building essence is required.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. The mushroom mate.
So that would be for my girlies, your yeah. luteal phase.
Oh, yeah.
And then into your
as you said, phase. It's highly, it's yes, the blood building is a quality, but just regulating of the female sexual organs in general and the chi that impacts that cycle and keeps that cycle regulated in terms of like we start going, yeah, you know, when you're in, you know, when you're especially getting into that springtime of the cycle, you've bled and now it's time to rebuild. Like, and you can see like a lot of women go like, yeah, that's when it makes sense. And they still go high then and it tapers off as they come towards it.
Okay, so you're saying then after, so in the follicular phase.
Yeah, and that's, and sorry, yeah, because okay. I think of it in the seasons, but at the same time.
So post-menstruation, so after the bleed, then you're building it back up. Okay.
It's a very general rule that you can start with, but then mm-hmm. intuition kicks in because it's not purely blood True. Building is what's going on. Like there's some, like I know some women tell me like, they're just like, yeah, during menstruation, I have to stop everything. And I'm like, yeah, great. Mm. I love that. And other women are like, that's when I need those feminine herbs like the most. So it really is my wife Tani does a way better job at like really going into the intricacies. I don't understand it. I just leave that there. But
everyone's going to be different for sure. Of like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, honestly. Yeah. Cause whenever I'm like on my menstrual cycle, like on that week, it's like, yeah, everything kind of like falls. I don't do a whole lot. Like I don't have a whole lot of herbs. I don't have a whole, it's just like simple, very like simplicity is where it's at. So that makes sense actually that you like everybody has a different intuitive need or just with their bodies. That's fascinating.
And also it's always worth noting, like, you know, like we're talking, you know, majority of the people listening probably understand that intuitive aspect and are going to be engaged with it and have the space to do that. And I know a lot of people are also going to be at a time when maybe there's some intense stuff going on in life and you don't have that space to guide your intuition's pointed elsewhere. And you just need to be like, just tell me a rule, mate. Yeah, you can just go into a quarter or half a teaspoon or more if you want, but you can just sit on half a teaspoon and you can just keep it up. You don't, that's not going to do any, that's not going to do it. There's no wrong by taking it during menstruation or not taking it through.
Sure. So yeah,
because you can always rest back onto that with tonic herbalism. I'm always going to, you know, in these conversations with you, lean into that, like the complexity of, you know, what I was going to suggest is like, you know, you've taken that. Now I would then remain curious just a little bit and try, you know, taking some chi herbs every now and then alongside of the I Am Gaia and then feel what chi herbs feel like. And you'll feel you'll have another layer of you'll intuitively know when you want the chi herbs. Or if you get like the Shizandra on its own, you watch what happens when you get to springtime and you'll go, oh, the I Am Gaia is like, oh, yeah, it's cool. We're sitting in the background. But you'll be like, I feel like Shizandra. I want like a big badass liver girl in there, like shining me up and cleaning me up and bringing a smooth flow of chi, but you wouldn't have you know, you don't know that yet. So there's got to be like that's where the curiosity of tonic herbalism is, like, what am I going to try next? And then you get a gauge. No, I don't need deer antler velvet for now. That's probably a little bit too heavy for me. But then in 2 years, you'll be like, deer antler, I'm so tapped out. I've just gone through the most stressful time of my life, and I'm so I feel degeneration coming into my body, and even the Jing plant herbs aren't working. I need an animal tonic herb to come in and restore essence. And I remember, you remember that feeling, and you're like, that's where deer antler velvet's relevant. So you go, it's a good practice to have that. Just like try a new thing every now and then.
Love that. I love that. Yeah. I have several things in the pantry, honestly. So I will definitely be looking more into it. I'm fascinated. My curiosity has piqued again on everything adaptogenics and mushrooms. So I'll be like doing all my research. Thank you for inspiring that. And you've answered the last question I was going to ask was how has curiosity played a role in your life? And you've answered that so well throughout this whole conversation. So I appreciate that. How can people find you and Superfeast? Go ahead and shout it all out right now.
Best place to find us is superfeast.com in North America there. If you're in Australia or New Zealand, superfeast.com.au. Go jump on the newsletter. We share a lot of information there on the newsletter. And if you might as well jump in there and create a little account and get into into our loyalty, just register to get a little account there. It's super fees. You immediately get access to a bunch of little awards and fun, unique things there. And I think we've got tiers there. I think you start as a barefoot herbalist and then you can eventually travel your way down there. We've got a podcast, Superfeast Podcast, where we dive deep into a lot of these concepts in a quite deep level. And jump on the newsletter there over at superfeast.com and you'll be a part of the community. And maybe follow us on Instagram as well.
Okay, perfect. I'll make sure I'll link that all in the description of the podcast episode. Thank you so much for having this conversation with me today. I feel very enlightened and very inspired, so I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much for listening. We love you guys. Stay curious, and until next time, bye.